Great, thanks very much. My angle would be a little different because I'm mainly, it's not that I'm not interested in what we can do with disseminating teaching, getting lectures out there. I think that's great and really important thing to do. My main interest at the moment and my main involvement has been in relation to using all of this and research. There were two reasons why I was interested to work with the project as it was, the Open Spires project as it was developing. One was that I was at the time working on this book about censorship, so anything to do with dissemination and making things freely and instantly available around the world was extremely important to me and valuable to me because it's the opposite of the subject I happen to work on. I might work in work on censorship, but I don't believe in it. The thing that I remember, there was a particularly magical moment in terms of setting up this website, was when I took there's a series, you'll see for this website, there's a series of things you can click on with documents, and those are just, they're just standard PDF documents of, but what were once secret censorship reports. And I just remember the experience of standing in front of a photocopying machine that could generate a PDF just like that, bunging in 30 pages of the secret document, and within the push of a button and 20 seconds, I'd created a PDF, then moved it over, and it was on the web. This document that a state had kept secret for years and years was now instantly available to anybody who wanted to look at it around the world. So that was one thing that I thought this kind of project was interesting for that reason. The other one, though, was I have been thinking about, and goes back to this book, is as an academic of a generation growing up in a world that was experienced the transition from, in fact, I almost just about experienced the transition from typewriters to PCs, but not really. But I did experience the transition from an academic world and a global public world, dominated by print media and television and radio and so on, to I've experienced in my life, as we all have, the rise of the digital medium. And thinking about that in terms of not just the big sort of digital projects that are very well funded and many of them are going on around the world, but in terms of how that might affect how I do my research, how I think about my research, what sort of things I can do. So in this case, which maybe I should mention that there can be sort of, given what Emma said, I agree completely with Emma that there's a perverse, especially in the scientific community, a perverse relationship between academics, their research, and publishers. But in this case, it was a happier relationship, was that OUP, I think rather recklessly, felt that this topic and this material, they wanted to try to use my book as what they call a crossover book. So it's an academic book that they're trying to publicize as a trade book. I mean, this is not light reading by any means, and I didn't intend it and didn't care to make it light reading. But they wanted to do that, and I said, okay, if you're going to do that, then what I want to do is strip out as much of the scholarly apparatus as possible and just give people a clean book to read. And go all the way through it. And what I will do is I will put all that kind of stuff that got, weighs a monograph down with footnotes onto the web and create other resources on the web. So I will go ahead with them on this project if we can make it a joint print publication. In fact, it's also an e-book, but it's a print publication and a website. So the website is linked to the book. With a series of web notes, so you can actually they're points using the alphabet where you can go from the book to the website if you want to pursue that more detailed information. So that was the one thing that was interesting in terms of how I could use the new space that's available to write the book slightly differently. Present the book differently, and knowing that the website was there. So that, for me, that's been an entirely happy experience. I'm sort of amazed by the fact that there's about 150 people around the world who seem to look at this every week, and I can see moments where it's being used for teaching or being used for somebody's research projects in Oldenburg in Germany, when they're spending a lot of time on the website and clearly getting using stuff of their resources to use in terms of the documents and so on. That was the one thing. The other thing that was the sort of misgiving I had about this particular project was it uses a lot of archival evidence, which is there, but I also interviewed people with a cassette recorder. And I sat down and spoke to them, and I have got these cassette tapes with lengthy interviews with apartheid-era censors and writers and so on. And I didn't make use of that. I haven't done nothing with that, and there would be issues about it because some of them are dead now, the issues about what I could do with that material, but I've used it in the book. However, with the next book that I'm working on at the moment, there will be a series of deliberately designed podcasts with interviews with Salman Rushdie, J.M. Coetzee, various other authors around the world, where I'm going to do that, actually make that as part of the research project, but I'm going to make the interviews part of what I'm doing as well. At the production, because I will then produce a book from that, which will make use and cite those interviews. But the interviews will also be available in one way or another as podcasts. So that's another way in which in this case, as it were, the production of the research and the book is very much integrated into what I'm doing with these sorts of materials. So as I say, I'm giving you the kind of researcher's angle of what's in it for me from a research point of view. That was the key thing. The thing that interests me the most as a researcher, however, because I'm still talking about books and analog stuff, but the thing that interests me most, and this is what I wanted to end on, is if we can click over to the Visual History Archive, is how can this medium and all the opportunities that it gives makes possible, how can it be used actually to do research fundamentally differently, as opposed to broadcasting what could be in a print medium? How can you actually start to think that this medium will become a new kind of message and a new way of, say, doing history? And at the moment, I'm collaborating and writing history, thinking about history. I'm collaborating with a project in Cape Town called it's the Visual History. What you need is the Visual History Archive .org is the main website. It's under construction, and what they are doing is I don't want to waste your time taking you through this because it's you can if you're interested in seeing what they do, you can just have a look yourself. But effectively, what you can do. What I've done is I've go into it. They're using Google. They're using Google Maps as a kind of a base on which to organize this material. And what you can do is you can choose a theme. So this here, well, the theme I chose was the Google Etu seven teenagers who were murdered by the police in the 1980s in Cape Town. And what you can do is you can then click on. You can choose that as your theme. You'll then be taken to this page. You can click on the first icon there, which will take you into the Cape Town area in which you have, and then you can start to move into and out of areas. And you can, at every point, you'll find icons where you can click on either documents or video footage or interviews or images of actual places or maps or the whole every kind of document you can imagine is there to give you a multi-documentary, multimedia perspective on this event, including the trial, the subsequent trials, and so on and so forth. So they are, or you can take a figure, like another theme is Nelson Mandela, and you can go and you can move on to Robben Island, you can be taken around the prison, you can look at his cell, you can look at footage of him actually being interviewed in his cell, you can look at his police records and the documents are there, the original documents, etc., etc. So I'm collaborating with them to do this. And I think the thing that strikes me as interesting about this is it really genuinely allows me to think about conceptually, intellectually, academically, think about representing history in a new way through a new medium. But here, what you can do is you can actually create, of course, what you're putting up there, and the interesting debate we're having is about keywords, which is a form of indexing. And there's an enormous amount of intellectual labor going into how you're organizing and making it possible for people to move around this document. But there is a huge opportunity for people to obviously construct their own narrative links in terms of their own projects and what they're doing. But the main thing is that you actually can create a multi-perspectival sense of history. So you can have, we can have in this project, a policeman standing in, you can click it, go into a building, you can click into the interrogation room, you can then click on an interview with the security policeman who interviewed the guy who fell out of the window of that police station and allegedly fell out of the window and died. And then you can interview the nephew of the guy who died, giving you his version of events and so on through that. So there's this, that really is, I think, a new way of representing history for all of us and for school school kids right the way up. It's a new way of telling the story of his, you know, telling historical stories, putting evidence out there, putting documents, everything. So that's what really interests me, and something you can have a look at in your own time, really. Thanks. So,